Hello, and welcome to episode 23 of XR Connections, a podcast focused on connecting people interested in and actively involved with immersive technology and experiences, augmented reality, AR, virtual reality, VR, and extended reality, XR. In this episode, we hear from Lauren Fade of VR Vision, with a specific focus on enterprise VR training and a specific example of a project's ROI and its impact in real-world effectiveness. In a moment, our conversation begins.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you for joining us today on XR Connections. How are you?
Hey, Liam. Thank you for having me. I'm well, keeping well, and looking forward to chatting with you on the podcast here.
Well, I am too, and I want to say thank you for reaching out. I've noted on many of these podcasts, please reach out to me, and you did. That's fantastic. That's what this is all about, meeting people and learning what other people are doing in this field, and I really appreciate you reaching out. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely. Looking forward to sharing. It's definitely nice to have this type of resource out there for an emerging industry. We need definitely more of this available on the market.
Thank you. It really is it's a growing industry, and I think a lot of listeners to this podcast are just finding out about this, and there's a lot to process, a lot of resources out there. And I'm really just, again, pleased that we're able to do this type of thing. One of the first questions I always ask, because this is an emerging industry, is what got you into this? What was the, and I use the term XR, but AR, VR, immersive, whatever you want. What was the first XR experience that the light bulb went off and said, I got to get into this?
Really tickled my fancy. Yeah.
Yes.
So that takes me back almost 10 years, I want to say, the early 2012, 2013, maybe. My first experience was actually with a smartphone using Google Cardboard. So it wasn't the headsets that we have today. It was taking my smartphone, putting it in a piece of cardboard. And then I was actually using it for Google Street View at the time to see you know, a panoramic view of a location before I would travel to it. So let's say I was going to, I don't know, San Francisco back then for the first time. I'd never been. And I want to see, you know, some of the areas I was going to be visiting, first person view. I could, you know, I can look on Google Maps, Google Street View, but I chose to put on a Google Cardboard and look around and feel like I was actually there. And that was, I want to say, my first real use of a virtual reality device. This is, you know, gave me a better understanding of the environment that I would be visiting prior to my visit, so that I was better oriented when I did actually arrive. Moving onward from that, I think my first actual VR experience using an actual VR headset was probably going to be the first HTC Vive. I want to say Space Pirate Trainer was the first like actual game that I played. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's like a 180 degree shooter where alien crafts fly at you and shoot at you from different angles, and you got your dual wielding handguns and other weaponry, and you got to shoot back. And I felt like that game was a lot of fun considering how early it was for the technology. I want to say that was right around the time that Facebook acquired Oculus for about, I don't know, $2 billion. And perhaps subliminally, that was when the light bulb moment went off for me.
Tell me a little bit about what you were doing before this light bulb moment, and then how that led to where you are now in the company, VR Vision.
So I've always been a tech nerd, so to speak. I taught myself how to program when I was 16. Went to school for computer science. After one semester, I realized I had already taught myself pretty much the entire curriculum, so I didn't follow through with that. I started a digital marketing firm at around 21, and I ran that for, I want to say, 7 years. Mm-hmm. So my digital agency was called Academic Ads, but I was having hardships with my old business partner at the time, who was struggling with some addictions and other issues. So I was kind of forced to sell the company because I couldn't continue doing business with him. But it was a blessing in disguise because it led me down a path where I started having discussions with one of my best friends at the time, and now my current business partner, Ronnie Serga, who is now the CEO of VR Vision. You know, Ronnie had a background in enterprise sales, and he wanted to change the scenery. He was getting burnt out. You know, I guess it's the type of role that can burn you out. And we had a lot of discussions, me and Ronnie, about emerging technologies and starting a business. So I think this was about 7 years ago. So we looked at all the emerging tech that would be happening at the time. And it was AI, robotics, cryptocurrency, augmented and virtual reality. And obviously all these had their own merits and growth paths and appeal and advantages and disadvantages. And in the end of the day, we chose VR because we both enjoy gaming, for one. We enjoyed playing with the technology, for two. And we felt that it was still relatively early in terms of having the longest runway for growth. So we felt that it would be a good spot for us, all those things combined. And we started VR Vision.
Absolutely.
That was about seven years ago.
7 years ago. So yeah, that's still very early. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a good choice. And so you decide to go into business with a new partner. You both have backgrounds in sales and in enterprise and in marketing.
Complementary skill sets.
Absolutely. Yeah. But a new technology for you to be exploring. What's the focus of VR Vision Group?
So in the early days, back when we didn't have any staff and it was basically just family, friends and family helping us start up, we self-funded the business. We've never taken on funding to date, but we built a revenue stream doing trade shows and events. So we bought, I think, 5 or 6 HTC Vibes way back when. Mm-hmm. And we did some digital marketing and we did some press around, you know, use VR at your next trade show event for entertaining the crowds. And, you know, you can take some time out from having drinks at your work conference and play some VR. So that was actually a hit for a couple of years before COVID. We had a lot of interest in this and we did a ton of trade shows and events. And thank God I don't do those anymore because they were back-breaking labor. It was a lot of fun because we would set up VR stations at corporate events and fundraisers, and people would get a chance to play VR for the first time. This was, you know, the early inception of the HTC Vibes, and no one really knew what the hell VR was. Yeah. So we would just let them play games like Beat Saber, Space Pirate, Tilt Brush, you know, all the early games. And people had a lot of fun, and it allowed us to generate revenue that we reinvested back in the business. I think around the third year, we stopped doing events and trade shows altogether. So we were able to reinvest enough to start building out an actual team of developers, 3D modelers, artists, you name it, to start developing what we do today, which is virtual reality simulations for enterprise training specifically. And we're growing pretty quickly. We have a team of around 20. We'll probably be at about 30, but with some big brands. Toyota is probably the biggest, but we're working with Siemens, a bunch of other smaller groups where we develop enterprise training simulations for real world jobs. Many times those jobs are going to be dangerous or in hard to reach areas. And using virtual reality just makes a lot of sense to mitigate risk or make hard to reach areas a lot easier using a virtual environment.
Absolutely, and I have seen, Lorne, that on your site and your activity on LinkedIn, you're posting, I would say, very valuable content about these topics.
We really try and do, high quality work here at VR Vision. We don't outsource anything. It's all in-house. And we've maintained a high quality standard with our work because we feel like it will really show better for the technology. And we've developed in two ways because there is basically two ways to develop VR training. One is with 360 video content. So that's, you know, where we take a 360 camera, we film a real world scenario or process, and then you take overlays and voiceovers and text overlays and you make it kind of interactive for a learning experience for the end user. There's a lot of merit to 360 video, but it lacks the interaction that you would get with a CGI-based environment. So that's a segue into the flip side of VR training is with CG-based environments, computer-generated graphics, video game-style graphics. And this is where we can basically create a digital double or a digital twin of any real-world job process, machine, tool, you name it, and create a one-to-one replica of what you would do in the real world, but in virtual reality, with any type of, you know, interaction of objects, manipulation of objects. Something that we rolled out earlier this year was multiplayer functionality. So we can now have unlimited people inside of a virtual environment, interacting together, learning together. And it really is a unique platform for training and for onboarding and for learning.
Great. I'm going to have a two-part question here. One is,
sure,
what's one of your favorite applications that you have developed, or one that's had one of the biggest impacts for one of your clients? And two, I know you're going to be speaking at the Tech Learn 2022 conference in Texas. What might people see there?
Absolutely. So at a previous conference, AWE USA, a couple months ago, my business partner, Ronnie, had a talk about the ROI, measuring the ROI on virtual reality training applications. Probably our most successful use case study to date, which was published on the Oculus for Business blog, was with Avangrid Renewables. And we basically developed a full OEM tech training facility for wind turbine maintenance and repair. So this is for any job where a user has to go to the top of a wind turbine. Inside of the wind turbine, there's all these machinery and parts, and it's very tight. They can only have one person up there. So this is a way for them to make that space trainable. So they could have a trainer now with trainees in this hard to access space. And when we did the cost evaluation for what it cost Avangrid to develop the training scenario versus what they were spending yearly on training related expenses, which were a lot of them were travel costs because they had to fly their trainees to this Portland facility. They measured around $8 million a year in saved training time related expenses.
Wow. That's
so impressive. That was a huge savings for them overall. And I think the cost to develop the VR training scenario was in the $200,000 to $300,000 range. So like a 40, 50X return on their investment there. So it is really groundbreaking technology. And that's what Ronnie spoke about at AWE. It sounds just how impactful it can be.
It sounds like an incredibly useful application in that case, where you have this, you know, potentially dangerous, complicated, very small environment where there's absolutely no way for someone to train you in the same space, even in the physical, world. The
incident rates. There's another area that we measured, which was incident rates. And that's where people get injured on the job training.
Yeah.
Whether you're getting electrocuted or you get hurt by some type of material falling on you. Those are eliminated altogether using virtual reality, obviously. So we reduce the material cost, the injury cost, as well as the travel cost and even time loss due to training. So there's a number of things we weren't even measuring in that calculation that we could really factor in as well. So there's a ton of merit to virtual reality. And I think more and more brands are going to start seeing that in the coming years.
I'll ask you this, Lauren, because it's just come to my mind, haptics, how's that helping? All these new technologies that are helping to, you know, make you
feel like you can push a button, right?
And all that business. Well, I'm just talking about in virtual reality training. I remember at the MIT hack that they had it was pre-pandemic. A guy had invented this glove so that pilots in the Air Force could, you know, pretend to press buttons and get a response.
The Sense Glove.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we tried that out. We tested it. It wasn't really a good fit for us. It's just too clunky right now. I think they have to really optimize it a little bit more and make it easier to use. Typically with our VR deployments, we try and make it as easy as possible for the user. because you have to remember, a lot of people haven't used VR before. This will be their first time. And if we're over inundating them with haptic feedback gloves and other peripheral accessories, it really just complicates the learning process. So, I mean, it's not to say that these tools won't be effective in later years. I just don't think it's there yet.
Oh, I would agree with you, because those gloves are going to cost, what, $5,000 or something?
Plus there's, so, yeah, I think there's, yeah, it's like 4,000 euros. So yeah, 5K basically, yeah.
But
not cheap either.
I guess the question was more about, where do you see the haptics coming into training in the future? You're saying, what I'm hearing from you is,
we're, I think more than anything, yet. Yeah, the external cameras and are allowing you to kind of get away from the controllers. So that's kind of where it's heading now. And as those exterior facing cameras get better, maybe with the Quest Pro that's coming out next month, we'll see doing away with the controllers altogether, and you'll be able to just use your hands for various functions. So that's kind of where it's heading. And I see that being a big benefit, because, you know, who wants to learn a bunch of controls and use joysticks on a controller when you could just go hands-free? It'll make the experience much smoother, I feel.
I agree. And, you know, I'm in this business, and I find these controllers to be suboptimal. I'll just say that.
Yeah, it's a learning curve, right? We have an onboarding demo that we give to all our clients, which is basically a tutorial on the controls. And it's, you know, how to use the joystick for moving around a scene so you don't get motion sick, how to use the buttons, which buttons do what, how to pick up objects using the triggers. So there's like a little bit of a learning curve there just to get the controls down. And many times, if you know, someone hasn't used VR before, they can be a little bit cumbersome at the
front. Be cumbersome and frustrating. And if you don't have someone trying to help you through it, it can be maddening. Just getting into a virtual world or a virtual environment, even with these consumer devices that are easy to use. But if you're just home sitting alone and you've never done this thing before, you can spend 3 hours in frustration just trying to, you know, enter a room.
I've been there. The early days of the first Oculus Rift, I was lost. It took me a couple months to get things figured out. So I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm the world's worst gamer and video gamer. I'm the guy that's on Omaha Beach with his rifle pointed at the sky and the sergeant yelling, "Get down!" any case, Lorne, what are you seeing in trends, or what are you excited about that's coming around soon? Are you excited for any new releases?
Well, we have the Pico Neo 4 that's coming out, and you know, they're really moving toward pushing enterprise market, compete, I think, with the Oculus or Meta Quest Pro, I think is what it's going to be called. Mm-hmm. Project Cambria was leaked. I think it was leaked earlier this week or last week, where they had some guy found a box outside of his hotel room door. And it was, yes, a Quest Pro just sitting there. And I'm like, oh, come on, how does that just happen? It doesn't make sense to me. But either way, I think it'll be interesting to see what the form factor is of both of those headsets, the Neo 4 and the Quest Pro. I'm looking forward to it. I think there may be some light leak issues because it seems a little too streamlined and it's a little too small. I think it might not be a full VR experience if there's too much light getting in. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see how. I'm excited to try it and see where it goes. I'm not excited with the price point because it is going to be like three times the cost of a Quest 2, and you know, that's always hurts adoption.
Yeah,
Oculus was losing money on the Quest 2 for a while, but that helped adoption. And I think they're trying to make up for that loss now with the Quest Pro.
This topic has come up on this podcast before, but I think it's worth asking your input on it. And that is reluctance to use the Quest because of the Facebook connection in regards to your enterprise. Any thoughts on that?
I mean, we have some clients we work with will not use it simply due to their internal privacy policies. Yep. So it has been an issue that's come up in the past. Meta has resolved that overall because they've kind of, their business edition headsets, which here's the frustrating thing. They don't make any more business edition Quest 2s. They've stopped production of them. So we're waiting patiently for them to release the Pro so that we can scale the business offering. But in the meantime, we've been forced to look at other alternatives, and Pico Neo 3 has been the easiest to work with to date, the ByteDance headset. But there is also HTC, you know, laying back with the I think it was the Vive Focus 3, I think it is. These are all standalone VR headsets. There is, on the other side of the coin, the PC-powered headsets, although I don't have much experience with PC-powered because we've kind of moved away from that altogether and focus on standalone, at least for the last 3 years.
Well, thank you, Lauren. We know that people can find you in Austin on the 22nd of the month. Where else do they find you online? What do you got some other conferences you want to let people know about?
Yeah, absolutely. How do they,
and what's the best way to contact you?
So you can reach me on Twitter and LinkedIn, Lauren Fade. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn and Twitter most days. You can visit our website, drvisiongroup.com, where we have a ton of content, white papers. I blog regularly. We have video content that we post regularly as well. We have case studies, you name it, it's up there. And lastly, I'll be attending two upcoming learning conferences. There's the Tech Learn 2022 conference next week in Austin, Texas. We're going to have a demo showcase to show the latest and greatest in VR tech, as well as a platform that we're launching that is going to be called the Vision Portal, and it's going to allow for basically administration of VR training at scale, which was kind of a missing piece in the market to date. And then the other conference I'm attending this year is going to be the Dev Learn Conference and Expo, and that's going to be at the end of October in Las Vegas. So if anyone listening is in town, feel free to draw me a line and let's meet up for a drink.
Very good. And you said you're expanding. I looked at your website. I see that you're hiring. Who are you looking for? And what's the best way to reach you about that? Or do they reach you? What's
Yeah, so you can just go to our website, drvisiongroup.com, click on the I'm hiring button. It's in the header. And there's a list of roles that we're hiring for, predominantly going to be VR AR developers and I think Unity developers to go along with 3D modelers. Those are the main two roles.
Very good. You're in Toronto. Are any of these positions remote?
Toronto only for now, but that may change in the near future.
Okay, very good. And Lauren, you are on top of things. Where do you get your information, your latest XR research? Who do you follow? Can you recommend
news?
Anybody's blogs? Any particular folks?
Well, other than the XR Connections podcast, I enjoy Scarred Ghost, the Tony, the Ghost Howells.
Tony is the best.
He's one of the best.
He was one of my first interviews. I love Tony.
Oh, really? So,
yeah.
Oh, he's a great guy. He's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So he's where I go for the latest and greatest in VR tech. I'm also a regular at the VR AR training meetups. They're every Thursday or bi-weekly Thursdays on their Slack. You can get an invite there. There's a lot of good info shared there. And another great source is VRM, the VRM Reality Innovators Network newsletter, where they send out a ton of timely information about the VR industry pretty regularly. So those are all good sources.
Yes, absolutely. What about in Toronto? Are there meetups? Is there a chapter up there?
There might be, but I have not been to it as of late, so I can't speak on it.
Well, there weren't a lot of meetups for a long time, you know.
Yeah,
and, COVID. But you never know where a meetup might go, because I love to trot this out, and not all that often, but I attend. AWE started as the New York augmented reality meetup that would be like held in the basement of a college classroom in 2013. So you never know, you know, Ori's thing. Ori's the best, and he took that from, you know, a group of 12 people, just 10 or 12 people. What's here? I'm showing my latest demo.
was
good for him.
It was the greatest, you know, and it is nice that we can get back to meeting people in person. So hopefully we'll be able to do that at some point.
I'm excited for conferences. Yeah, we need more.
Yeah. Well, Lauren, this has been great. I really appreciate your time, and the best of luck to you at the conferences and with your new projects.
Appreciate it, Liam. Thank you for having me, and cheers. All the best.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to this episode of XR Connections. A few notes. There was a brief audio dropout glitch when Lorne mentioned his top clients and projects. So to be clear, they are Toyota, Siemens, and Avangrid Renewables. Also, a clarification. When I mentioned seeing a haptic glove for pilot training at the MIT hackathon, that glove was not the Sense glove that Lorne referred to. The tech that I saw was from Contact CI, and I was given a demo of it by Tom Buchanan, who I interviewed in episode 14, and it is well worth a listen for a wealth of information on haptics. All of the projects, tech, events, and people that are mentioned, and the people that we encourage you to connect with, are in the show notes. But again, to be clear, Lorne and I were so enthusiastic speaking about one of these people that I'm afraid his name might have been missed. And you should not miss him, because he's really one of the best sources of info out there. He was one of my first interviews. And as you heard, Lorne and I, we love this guy. Anthony Vitillo. That's V-I-T-I-L-L-O. His blog is called The Ghost Howls, and he goes by the moniker Scarred Ghost, S-K-A-R-R-E-D. I was really thrilled that Lorne found me through the podcast. Please do reach out to me. You can find me on LinkedIn as Liam James O'Malley of Mars or Mercury, as in the planets or the deities. And the show notes are at marsandmercury.com. Thanks again for listening, and please do connect. And as always, I would be grateful if you would share this episode with anyone you think might be interested in this exciting new emerging technology. Thank you.